Okay, so can you hear me now? Great, thank you. So I want to say a few more words on now on this dharmic pleasure. To be more grounded or rooted in the teachings of the Buddha and the teachings of mindfulness, this idea of dharmic pleasure comes from the second foundation of mindfulness. So the Buddha offered four areas in which to center mindfulness practice, or to four areas of our life that really work well to strengthen, cultivate, develop our capacity for present moment awareness. And the second of these four that he gave is usually called the foundation on feelings or feeling tones. And the idea being that all experiences that we have can be can appear either as pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And what's helpful about knowing that is that sometimes very complicated social experiences, for example, it's hard to know what's going on. And if you have to analyze or figure out what in the world's going on here, we can get pulled into the maze, the labyrinth of the situation and of our mind. And sometimes, not always, sometimes to just recognize the simplicity, this event that I'm in is unpleasant. And then recognize, I know how to be with unpleasant. I can just hold it and be present for the unpleasantness without needing to kind of get pulled into all the complexity of it all. Sometimes when we get attached to things, we're attached to the pleasantness of the thing. And by recognizing that we're oriented towards the pleasure, that can make the whole situation there also much more simple. I once became attached to a Buddha statue, but I saw that as the attachment, the desire arose, what was prompting it, what was eliciting the attachment, was the pleasure of looking at this beautiful Buddha figure, the statue. And when I saw that it was a pleasure I was attached to, not really the statue, that shifted my attachment. Then it was like I was easier to let go or just allow myself to enjoy the statue without being pulled into this world of attachment. So there's something about the simplicity of seeing pleasant and unpleasant that can help us be present without it being complicated. Can help us be present so that we can be freer in the situation we find ourselves in. So, in some ways, what we're trying to do, one of the things we're doing in mindfulness practice is learning to be comfortable with discomfort, learning how to be present and non-reactive to difficult situations, uncomfortable situations. And we're trying to learn how to be non-reactive to pleasant situations. And so we're learning that art. But in this teachings on the second foundation of mindfulness, on pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant, the Buddha goes on and makes a distinction between those feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, or neither, which are sensual, and those which are non-sensual. The language he used, the literal meaning of what he said, was of the flesh and not of the flesh. And maybe in English we can say carnal and non-carnal. I don't know if that works for some people. But how I understand this is that there are some pleasures that arise because our physical senses are stimulated. So like a massage, maybe, or good food, or a beautiful thing that we see. That there's a sight object, there's a touch object, there's a taste object, which somehow stimulated those nerve endings. And the pleasure comes from that. So in a sense, the pleasure comes from external. In the Buddhist tradition, there's also a kind of pleasure that's of the flesh, the sensual pleasure, that comes from the being stimulated by wonderful thoughts, ideas, fantasies. Sometimes ideas in the mind are considered sensual, even though they don't come from external, they have that same characteristic of being, belong to that sensual world. Distinct from that is that which is non-sensual. Some people, some translators have translated the world, these two words as worldly and not worldly, unworldly. Not of the world, of the world, and not of the world. And that's maybe a little complicated and problematic to do it that way, but just trying to point to this distinction is being made. And I understand that which is non-sensual is that pleasure that arises without any of our ordinary senses stimulated. And one way I understand this is that it comes from a deep sense of inner well-being that has no external cause in the world. Things could be going not so good around us. We can be in ill health. And this non-sensual joy or pleasure can be there together with pain, together with uncomfortable situations. It's not that it's a joy or a happiness or well-being or a pleasure, which is not dependent on what's happening in the world. It's not ignoring the world, but it's the world might be very unpleasant to be with, but there's still a home, a place inside of well-being that's available, that makes us more available or more resilient in being in the world, of this world that's so difficult. And so this, some people call this non-sensual pleasure spiritual pleasure, or I like to call it dharmic pleasure, because it has a lot to do with comes out of dharmic practice, practicing the Dharma. And there's a number of ways in which dharmic pleasure arises in practice. In a very simplistic way, simple statement way of saying it, it can arise from concentration practice. That as we get, what concentration is a unification of the mind, a gathering together of all the different faculties of mind and having them work together in harmony for the same purpose at the same time. The same purpose meaning to gather itself around some present moment and experience that's happening, like the breathing. And if all our faculties harmoniously come together, work together around and really get centered and in the groove with breathing, for example, there's that harmony tends to elicit pleasure, a well-being that's called, sometimes it's called joy. The Pali word is piti, joy, or sometimes it's called gladness, pamoja. There's a variety of wonderful terms in Pali, gladness, joy, rapture, happiness, that get stimulated from concentration practice. There's also that happens through mindfulness practice, because in mindfulness practice too, at some point, our different faculties, our thoughts, our feelings, our intentions, our motivations, our body, they're all working in harmony. And as the things get gathered together, we're no longer distracted and no longer resisting things. We're no longer caught up in judgments and criticism. We're no longer caught up in the fragmentation that comes from really being preoccupied about self, me, myself, and mine. Am I doing this well? And am I supposed to try harder? And I want to have a different experience. I need to get rid of that. And this whole constellation of self-concern, as important as it is in some areas of life, tends to be fragmenting, and it tends to interfere with the gathering together, the unification, the harmony of all our faculties, all our being, kind of at home in itself, settled in itself, coming into a kind of wholeness in itself. And that wholeness, that gathering together in harmony, can elicit a tremendous sense of well-being. That's a kind of pleasure. And that can be quite strong. It can be weak and subtle. It can be quite strong. It can be quite pervasive. It can get your attention, strong enough to have your attention, strong enough so it's stable, and we can kind of rest in it and be supported by it. Strong enough so it's stable enough so we can kind of, sometimes it lingers after meditation into our daily life. We feel this kind of sense of well-being and pleasure and satisfaction that seems to emanate from within the body itself, from the heart itself or something. The purpose of meditation, of this kind of pleasure, is not to have pleasure. So this is not a pursuit, hedonistic pursuit of just having pleasure. But rather, there's a few things to understand about it. One is that a lot of the non-sensual distress that we feel, suffering that we feel, is itself a fragmentation, is itself a disharmony in our system. And so as we become more unified, less conflicted with ourselves, less caught up in attachments and fears and desires and ambitions, things have a chance to come into harmony. And that just then produces a sense of well-being. You don't have to even want the well-being. you'll have it. But also that sense of well-being makes it much more interesting for the mind to want to stay present, to be non-reactive. It supports the mind's desire or orientation towards being present, being here. And so it's like a great encouragement to keep practicing, to keep doing what you're doing that got that far. Don't now linger. Don't get stuck there. But keep doing the practice. Keep going along, developing yourself. It's a doorway to freedom. The Buddha, when he discovered this non-sensual pleasure of meditation, it was a revelation for him. He had never understood the value that this had. And he said, oh, now I know this is the path to liberation. And this is a pleasure I do not need to be afraid of. And I think sometimes people are afraid of meditative pleasure because it's so intense and so full. In the ancient world, they were afraid of it because they were kind of anti-pleasure. They were afraid that it involved attachment. And the Buddha discovered, you don't have to be afraid of this. It's possible to get attached to this non-sensual pleasure, but if you're practicing, you won't stay attached too long because you'll see the downside, the hindrance of being attached. This non-sensual pleasure has another very important function in human psychology, human life. And that is, it's a reconditioning factor. You know, we get very deeply conditioned by our experiences growing up and as an adult. And some of the conditioning we get as children, maybe with our family or in worldly experience, sometimes a single event, traumatic event, can be very powerful condition, or maybe ongoing event can condition us in very strong ways so that we're predisposed towards fear, towards anger, towards desire, towards insecurity, towards feeling that something's wrong with us, all kinds of conditioning that we get from society and from our things. And this is very powerful, this conditioning, and it's hard to practice with it. And even if we see it, it's hard to let go of it. But there's something about starting to experience this dharmic pleasure, dharmic well-being, that is a reconditioning factor. It begins to thaw some of the unhealthy conditioning we've received. And so when we start feeling this dharmic pleasure, it's really healthy to allow yourself to feel it. And to allow yourself to not only feel it, but allow it to be registered. Take it in. You're welcome to feel it. You're welcome to take in the good. Drink the goodness of it. Drink the feelings of it. Really take it in and let that kind of reassure you and help you feel safe. And let something inside of you know that things are good here. It's possible. As opposed to having somehow gotten the message growing up that this is a frightening world to live in. To some degree, of course, it is. But to have that be the conditioning, and that, so that's the kind of the default mode in which we're operating, that's not necessary. And in fact, we're much more resilient and able to meet the world when we don't have the conditioned feeling sense inside that the world is a dangerous place, but rather we're conditioned by the fact that, oh, it's possible to rest in a deep sense of inner security, inner safety, inner well-being that comes together with this dharmic pleasure. So it's not easy to have this dharma pleasure be strong enough that it's a reconditioning factor, that it's opening the doorway to the path to further freedom. It can take years for it to really grow and develop. And it's not a mistake that it takes a long time. There's important work we're doing on the way there. But I want to teach this because some people have never gotten the message or the teaching that dharmic pleasure is actually an important part of the path. And sooner or later, many times it's later, it's expected. It's part of the path. So to learn to know this is the case, when you have the experience of it, then you can say, oh, here it is. This is good. This is right. This is part of the path. I don't have to reject it. I don't have to feel something's wrong with me because I'm feeling pleasure. I don't have to worry about being attached, because you probably will get a little bit attached to it. Everyone does. But that it'll work itself out if you keep practicing. So don't worry too much about it. And you're allowed to feel at home in it, to take it in, to feel it, let it grow and develop and suffuse you. People experience this very different from each other. Some people, it's very, very personal how much it's experienced. Some people, it's very subtle. And that's fine. That's all it needs to be. Some people, it's very strong and intense. Some people, by hearing this teaching, some people can recognize little hints of it. Oh, there's a hint. There's a little flavor of it. It's there in the cracks between the things. And by beginning to recognize it, there's an art to kind of making room for it, acknowledging it, being present for it. And that acknowledgement, presence, attention to it, sometimes is the very thing that allows it to grow. This dharmic pleasure is generally not something we can make happen. So I call it emergent. It's something that happens when things come into harmony. And one of the ways our system comes into harmony is when we make a lot of space for everything to be there. Everything has a place in mindfulness practice. And that means that even if you have difficult conditioning, or if you have strong tendencies that are not healthy for you to have, thoughts that are judgmental or critical or angry, or the beauty of mindfulness is that we keep opening and becoming bigger than whatever the experience is. We don't get caught by it. And by allowing it, rather than participating in it, rather than feeding it or reacting to it, something begins to settle. Something begins to open up more. And this trusting of this opening and settling, that is where we begin finding things come into the kind of harmony that's needed, where everyone has, everything has space, that this dharmic pleasure begins to emerge for us. And as it emerges, allow for that. Don't push it. Don't try to force it to be more. But then if you allow it, in its own time, it'll know how to grow and spread and develop out of your practice. So those are my thoughts about this dharmic pleasure. And we'll take a lunch break now. We'll start here where I talked longer than I was planning to. So it was supposed to be an hour and 15 minutes for a lunch break. Now it's just a little bit more than an hour. I can stay for about 10 minutes or so. If some of you also would like to stay and ask some more questions, or if that managers can track the new questions that might come. But if some of you have questions at this point, you can type them in the question basket, and one of the managers can read them to me, and I'll answer the best I can. So those of you having lunch, enjoy your lunch.
So there's still some questions from the previous session that we could start with, if that's okay with you, Gil.
Yeah, maybe that. But those people, if we're going to do those, maybe later, that maybe they're already gone to lunch, the people ask them. So I was wondering, maybe we should, so few, I think, that maybe you could choose, if we can wait and see if anyone wants to type in a new one during this free session of questions that's unplanned.
Okay, here's one that just came in.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as unworldly, unpleasant feelings?
Yes, there is. And the Buddha in his teachings says so little about this that we have to kind of extrapolate or understand it for ourselves. But it seems to be, this is where calling it unworldly maybe makes it complicated, where I prefer dharmic, because it's connected to dharma practice. And this is what the little hints the Buddha gives of what he means by this, is someone who has a strong desire to practice the dharma, but doesn't have the opportunity to do it, and feels a certain, this is very unpleasant. Maybe they feel a certain despair. And that would be unworldly or non-sensual displeasure or unpleasantness. So, whether it's all forms of psychological discomfort, exactly what fits in this category, it's a kind of we don't have good teachings about it. But I think of it, I associate it most strongly with any discouragement or despair or unpleasant feeling around, feeling somehow you're not able to follow the practice or engage in the practice fully.
If you have been practicing for many years and dharmic pleasure doesn't come, have you been doing something wrong?
Well, I don't like the language of wrong, but maybe we can reword it to say, is there something else to do? And it might be a reframing of dharmic pleasure, because the word pleasure is so evocative and so strong. There might be, I would like to know if that person has benefited from the years of practice. And there are other benefits besides pleasure. And in fact, those benefits might, recognizing what those benefits might be, might help the person recognize something, a positive, some positive feeling that comes with the practice that maybe we wouldn't call pleasure in the way we usually think of pleasure, but would certainly be positive. Some satisfaction, some gratitude, some appreciation, some good feelings that come with doing it. And then, but it's an interesting thing to consider. If there's been years of practice and no pleasure, dharmic pleasure, it might be something to talk to a Buddhist teacher about. Just to explore and understand maybe if there's something that, that is being overlooked, or that there's some way that the practice can be tweaked so that there is a greater sense of unification or harmony that arises, and maybe an exploration of what gets in the way of that. So, thank you.
What is meant by neither pleasant nor unpleasant? Is it void of feeling?
No, it's a, definitely a kind of feeling, but it's in English, many people like to just call it neutral. It's neither pleasant or unpleasant, but it's clearly a feeling, a sense of something. It's said that they're very rare. If you're really, really attentive and sensitive, almost everything's going to be pleasant or unpleasant in some way. But there might be some things, like there might be some experiences that we have that are not being registered for us. We're not taking it in or attending to it in such a way that we experience it as either pleasant or unpleasant, but it's kind of neither. So it could be that you're walking down the street and you're aware later, once you've walked past some building, that the building was painted brown. And at the time of kind of being aware of that brown building, kind of, you weren't involved with any kind of sense of a feeling around the pleasant or unpleasant feeling. It was just brown. And so the way that that experience was taken in was without any sense of pleasure or any sense of displeasure. So that would be, in that moment, that experience was neither pleasant or unpleasant. If you go back down the sidewalk and then look at the brown building, you might say, wow, that is the most pleasant brown I've ever seen. Or that's unpleasant. but the experience itself didn't have pleasant or unpleasant in it, because we weren't tuning in. We were aware enough to know what was going on, but we weren't tuning in that level to take it in that way. Hopefully that made sense.
I've heard the suggestion to notice in daily life the feeling of well-being that can occur in ordinary ways, for example, as the result of having some desire met, as a way to learn to recognize well-being more generally. Can you comment on this?
It sounds like a good idea. It can be good to, to have the ability to receive and feel sensual pleasure that we have. Some people can have sensual pleasure available, but they're not paying attention to it very well. And you could finally be able to get an ice cream cone. You haven't had one for decades, and somehow you feel it's okay today. And then you meet an old friend on the sidewalk as you're walking away from the ice cream with her. And you're still licking the ice cream cone, but you're so happy to see the friend. You're talking to the friend. You don't even notice when you finish the ice cream. And let alone felt the pleasure of the ice cream, because you're so distracted. So taking time to feel sensual pleasure can be a training in not being distracted, and get a feeling, a sense of what it's like to be living in an undistracted way. Not so we can, always feel sensual pleasure, but so that we can then have the ability to be undistracted from the non-sensual pleasure when it starts to appear. And I would kind of like to believe that for many people, there's more non-sensual well-being available than we avail ourselves of, because we're so distracted and so caught up in our concerns. And so learning to be non-distracted and present, I think will help us feel more well-being. So I like what the person said. Please do.
There's so many good questions. We're sorry that we can't get to all of them. But
yeah, maybe one more, and then we give people the hour for lunch.
I don't think I have ever experienced the extended quiet required for breath meditation. The most I can experience is quiet focus on 4 or 5 breaths. Is it possible to be in this state of being, practicing mindfulness awareness all day?
Well, kind of. It's possible in certain situations to really, and it's possible, it also depends on what you mean by mindfulness all day. You know, for me, it's kind of second nature to have some kind of present moment awareness most of the time. Occasionally, I'll lose touch, but it seems like it's like kind of, I've done practice for so long, it feels like it's just second nature to do it. So am I mindful all day? You know, much of the day, much of the time. And on the other hand, to be able to be quietly, calmly present for 4 breaths is fantastic. I would celebrate that rather than being discouraged, and just feel appreciate that you'd be able to do it for that long. And then next time it occurs to you to be mindful of breathing, do 4 breaths again, and just keep coming back and being content with 4 breaths. And I think it could be transformative. Do 4 breaths, and maybe I guess you stop because you got distracted. And then as soon as you can remember, do the next 4, start again. I think that it's well worth appreciating those 4 breaths and letting that be an encouragement to come back and doing it again and again. So, well, thank you. I apologize for that. There's more questions than we have time to answer, but hopefully what we do answer is helpful, and we'll see what we can do later. So thank you, and enjoy, for most of you, I think, lunch hour. Some of you are different time zones. So continue with a contemplative day during this hour. Thank you.